I found a secluded spot on a clifftop on Mallorca's north coast. I'm not entirely alone, as there are wild goats picking among the rocks here, and you may hear them bleating from time to time. The seagulls today, though, are fairly quiet. Now, I've picked this spot because the sea stretches out before me to the horizon, and it seems to represent infinite possibilities for adventure. So, it appeared to be the perfect place from which to introduce my guests this week. For more than a decade, Bruce and Tiffany Halibisky have been on the move. Aboard their 1952 John Atkin-designed sailboat Vixen, they've crossed the Atlantic 3 times, visited more than 30 countries, invited people of many nationalities on board, and quite remarkably, welcomed 2 children into their lives. Daughters Soliana and Sepha Jane were born in New Zealand and Brazil, respectively. Their amazing life is even the subject of a short film, Vixen's Voyage, which you can find online. But now the Halibiskies are back on dry land, living on Orcas Island in the Pacific Northwest, just a few miles shy of the Canadian border. Their plan was to let the girls get to know grandparents, uncles, aunts and cousins. But it seems the earth beneath the Halibiskies' feet doesn't quite agree with them. After just a few months ashore, they are already planning another passage. I spoke to this remarkable family a few weeks ago.
Vixen was launched in 1952 in Connecticut, and she went around the world in the 50s. She's 34 feet long, and I bought her about 13 years ago. She's designed by Atkin, who is an American designer out of that call and archer tradition. So double-ended, heavily built, gaff rig, timber construction.
What drew you to this particular type of vessel?
Well, I'm trained as a traditional wooden boat builder, so I was familiar with those kinds of boats and knew just from reading and talking to people how well they performed offshore. And I think in Vixen's case, with that long keel and the low aspect gaff rig, you know, she goes in a straight line really well. She does not turn very well, but for ocean crossings, that directional stability is really useful. We don't have a wind vane or an auto helm. We use a sheet tiller system to help the already natural tendency to just go in a straight line, much like Slocum did or some of those earlier circumnavigators.
Did you need to do any work on her?
Well, fortunately, before I bought her, she had about a 12-year restoration in Port Townsend, Washington. A guy just took her on, and he really went over the whole boat from the keel bolts, a lot of replanking, reframing. And so when I bought her in 2002, she was, even though I say she's launched in 1952, she was pretty much a brand new boat.
You say no auto helm. Do you have any modern electronics and conveniences on board?
We do have some, and even over the course of our 11-year trip, that technology changed. So it was evolving, and if a technology became cheap enough and reliable enough and small enough that I could fit it on the boat conveniently, I didn't hesitate to adapt it. But that said, compared to a lot of boats that are going around the world, we would be considered pretty minimalist. I mean, we obviously had a GPS running and your basic depth sounder and the basic instruments, but we didn't have a lot of complex systems.
For a time, traditional boat building materials were cast aside in favor of wire rope in stainless steel. Now, of course, soft rigging is very much back in favor, albeit with modern synthetic materials. Did Vixen ever undergo a conversion?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think when she was originally built in the 50s, she would have had a galvanized rig. And then sometime in her restoration, she was re-rigged with stainless. So that was what she had when I bought her. And in the tropics, I think it's a particularly hard environment for that stainless wire. In fact, we did lose a stay. And I have to say, talking to a lot of other people who crossed oceans, that's not that uncommon. Fortunately, with a gaff rig, you're so overstayed, a very low aspect rig, it wasn't catastrophic. Whereas I think with a tall Marconi rig, losing one stay, even in light winds and the mast is going to go overboard. So that said, about 5 years ago, I re-rigged her just with galvanized parcel and served, much like you said, as it would have been done a long time ago. It took a bit of education on my part, learning to wire splice and setting up the whole project. But once I had it, I was really happy with this new rig that Vixen has. It's just galvanized wire, which is relatively inexpensive compared to stainless, and then hand-spliced eyes and porcelain served. And I think if that rig could last forever, if she's periodically sluiced with linseed oil or some kind of pine tar.
Did you buy Vixen with the intent of living aboard for a decade or more?
I can't say that we did it specifically. I'd done a little bit of offshore sailing and enjoyed it on other boats. And so when looking at Vixen, that was one of the qualities that attracted me to her, that she could go offshore and that she had already done this trip around the world in the 50s. I'd also just met Tiffany, and we saw the boat together actually for the first time, and we lived aboard the boat for 2 years in Victoria at the end of Vancouver Island there. And I think the moment that we decided to go offshore was when I saw listed another cruising couple's inventory. They'd finished a 7-year cruise of the Pacific, and they were selling like all the charts of the Pacific and the life raft and the EPIRB. And I wanted to offer them a single price for everything. But before I went to do this, I told Tiffany, you know, if we buy all this gear, we're not going to stay here in Victoria Harbor. And she was enthusiastic at the idea of sailing to Hawaii. So we went and bought all that gear. And then, yeah, within a year, we were in Hawaii. And we really enjoyed that first passage. And we were able to keep ourselves going financially. So I think it was that first trip to Hawaii went so well and was such a joy, and the boat performed really, really as I had imagined, that we just carried on from there and dropped down to Tahiti and just carried on for 11 years.
Tiffany, is Bruce telling the truth, or do you see things differently?
Well, you know, I'd never gone offshore before. I didn't know what to expect. I expected it to be far more challenging. We didn't get hit by any storms, no gales. In fact, now that I have something to compare to, when I look back, I think, wow, that was just a golden run. It couldn't have been any better. We had hatches open for a lot of the trip, so it wasn't wet. The water was getting warmer. We were really enjoying ourselves. We had some crew members with us, which were family. It was a very precious time. And it could have been the opposite, but because it was such a great run, we definitely wanted to go further. And I think we did, again, get very lucky in our other crossings, because we were able to just incrementally test our skills. So what I mean by that is we didn't get hit by any storms immediately. In fact, you know, it took a couple of years for the winds to get incrementally stronger. And by that time, we had a pretty good skill set, or at least we knew Vixen very well by that time. And we had sorted out ourselves as a team as to how we would conduct ourselves in certain situations. So that was very convenient.
And when was that first leg to Hawaii?
So that was in September of 2004, and it was a 25-day run. And, you know, once we dropped down to latitude where we hit those trade winds, it was really, really nice sailing. For us to get into some tropical waters really, you know, changed the flavor of living aboard. And no longer were we sort of living in our rain gear, but, you know, just living in our swimsuits. So life made a change for the better.
And did you come up with a master plan then?
No, certainly not. In fact, we never had a master plan. We never had the intention of sailing around the world. And we certainly just took it port to port. We always checked in, you know, monthly, weekly, daily. Were we happy? Were we still getting what we wanted out of this lifestyle? We certainly didn't know financially how we would survive, but we somehow sorted it out and we kept working along the way. And because of the lifestyle, I think we didn't need a whole lot of money to keep ourselves sustained. So with those factors coming together, we just kept going. And of course, there's always something around the next corner to see that's exciting. So that allure of seeing the next culture, seeing the next country, kept us going. Had we set out with the determination of sailing around the world, it might have been overwhelming. But as it was, we just said, okay, well, let's sail to this next island group, and then we'll check in and see what we need to do from there. It seemed like a good approach to us. It worked. Certainly by the time we got to Australia, And now we have had a child, and we were heading through the Torres Strait up into Indonesia. That was a turning point because we realized, okay, we are no longer just Pacific Ocean cruisers. We are now entering into a different ocean, and there's no turning back. So that would have been the turning point of like, okay, Vixen's going to take us around, or we'll see what happens, but we're gonna try to, you know, get around the world.
My name is Matt Rutherford. I am the only person in history to have circumnavigated the Americas nonstop. I've sailed alone across the Atlantic twice. I've crossed the Pacific. I've sailed through the Bering Sea and around Cape Horn. I understand the challenges you will face trying to accomplish your blue water dreams. And I know how important it is to have the right boat. Whether buying a blue water boat or selling your blue water boat, Rogue Wave Yacht Sales has the experience to make that happen. Email me at matt@roguewaveyachtsales.com.
Looking for luxury accommodation in Mallorca, but don't want to pay high summer prices? Well, Mallorcan Tonic, the low-season luxury hotel booking website, is here to help. We can save you hundreds of euros on your hotel choice, making sure you enjoy exceptional accommodation at a fraction of the summer rates. In addition, each of our hand-picked hotels offers tempting low-season incentives, including further discounts, room upgrades, and complimentary cava on arrival. Whether you choose the buzz of Palma, cool coastal views, or the magnetism of the mountains, we have a hotel to suit you. You can also book our favourite restaurants, from local eateries to Michelin stars, each offering a free glass of cava. And there's lots of helpful hints about what to do during your visit. So if you're missing your sunshine fix and want to beat the winter blues, then click on MallorcanTonic.com and let us find you your dream hotel and save you money.
What surprised me was that there is a community of cruisers. And, you know, it's overwhelming to think about entering an island group that you are completely unfamiliar with. For instance, the Fijian waters are just strewn with reefs. And when you look at the chart, you just think, oh my God, how are we ever going to navigate into these places? You certainly don't want to do it in the dark, and you don't want to do it without proper coordinates. And you want to have a bit of knowledge, local knowledge. So what happens is, as you come into more traditional ports where people tend to congregate, there's other cruisers, and everybody is there to help each other and share information. And a lot of people will have more experience than you do, or vice versa. And so that's a real advantage, is to connect with other people. Usually it's short term, or sometimes you don't know when you'll see these people again. But if everybody's kind of on the trade wind route, it's not unusual to bump into each other a couple years down the road and again share more experiences. But it's the information that gets passed along that becomes extremely helpful, because it's firsthand knowledge. Maybe somebody's been there before. They say, oh, go check out this island group. You're going to love it. If you like this, you're going to love this. And, you know, maybe it had been 10 years since they'd been there, but, you know, things don't change all that much. Political climates change, but the actual geography of places don't change that dramatically. So sure enough, there would be beautiful anchorages to settle into. And if someone had been there before and gave it the thumbs up, then you could incorporate it into your plan. So that cruising community was something I had no idea existed. And, you know, now I have friends all over the world, and that's a wonderful thing.
Bruce, how do you prepare a 60-year-old sailboat for a circumnavigation? How did you outfit Vixen?
We do not have a refrigerator, which is a bit unusual in this day and age. We cook with propane, which I think is a good choice. And then as far as provisioning, you know, say like that trip to Hawaii of 25 days, that was a long one. The longest trip was Panama to Hawaii on the way home, which was 41 days. So we did have some pretty long trips. And I think in the earlier years, we would carefully plan out our daily meals. And then as we got better at it, it was kind of more second nature. That 41-day trip, we were really preparing for not a lot of wind. And we kind of just basically filled up the boat as much as we could with water, fuel, and food. Having done other voyages, we had a feeling that we would make it there.
Do you remember where you were when you learned that Tiffany was pregnant?
Yeah, we just sailed 1,000 miles from Fiji down to New Zealand. We wanted to have a child, so it was pretty exciting when we found out she was pregnant. And talking to people in New Zealand, it seemed like a good place to have a baby. So in fact, we really lived in New Zealand for about 1.5 years. Soli was born just 9 months after we got to New Zealand in Whangarei. We even had a little apartment ashore. We bought a car. We had a cell phone. We were settled in. The boat was anchored out front on the Whangarei River. Yeah, we were pretty settled into New Zealand life. And this little baby came along, which was very exciting. And we had a wonderful midwife in New Zealand. But then after about, it wasn't much more than maybe 9 months after Soli was born, we sailed up to back up to Fiji, that 1,000 miles, with this little baby. And that all went well. I mean, as before the baby can crawl, the boat's a pretty ideal child-safe place for them. Yeah, I mean, it opened up a whole new world having a kid on board, just as far as meeting new people. And I think when you come into a lot of these cultures without any children, that's very unusual. Like, they would never leave their village without their families. So if you come as a single-hander, that's pretty strange. If you come as a couple without any kids, that's a little bit unusual. But if you come as a family, there's a lot of strange elements about your life that they might not understand, but they certainly get that the family part of it. And you're greeted really as a friend, you know, just because you have kids with you. So that was great, traveling with kids.
Tiffany, when you found out you were going to have a child, did you consider heading home?
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, the reason we thought that this would be a good time to have a child was because we had so much time. And so it just seemed like the perfect window because both Bruce and I could be parents. There wasn't going to be that traditional trading off like, honey, you go to work now and I'm going to take care of the child. No, in fact, we would just sit around the cockpit and pass the baby back and forth. And so we ultimately had this incredible open schedule and freedom of time. I didn't know any different, but it seemed for both Bruce and I that why not? You know, this was going to be part of our journey. And I was certainly not worried about having a child in New Zealand. They have an incredible system there. The only thing that maybe was hard was that I didn't have my family and friends around. But, you know, people go the extra mile to come and spend precious time with you. So I felt like having both my mom come to New Zealand and Bruce's mom there was all the family support that we needed. And we already had our group of friends there. So it was a very supportive time. And that maybe would have been the one thing that would have deterred me. I wasn't worried about having a child on board. I was a little concerned about what those ocean crossings might be like. But to tell you the truth, with the way you do a night watch schedule and the way you do a night watch schedule with a child, it's very compatible. So we were sort of in that rhythm, and it really made sense to us.
What's the age difference between the girls?
Yeah, that's a good question because, being in that cruising lifestyle, I really didn't know. I knew that I would like to have more than one child, but I really didn't know how that was going to work on the boat. And so what happened was Soliana was about 3 years old when I started to think, you know what, I think I could have another child, another baby, and feel like I was confident enough to take care of Soliana. I could hear her little feet padding around on the deck above. I knew that she was safe, and we had our netting up. She wasn't a kamikaze kid. She didn't, you know, try to climb the lifelines all the time. She knew the parameter of the boat. She knew what was safe. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I can conceive now of taking care of a child, a baby down below, and not feeling like I had to run after a toddler. And so at about 3, I think we started thinking about our next child. Now, of course, you know, it didn't happen at the drop of a hat. It took some time. But just after Soliana turned 4, Cepha Jane was born. And we were on our way to Brazil. We had left Cape Town, South Africa, and we were doing our Atlantic crossing. And I had just learned that I was pregnant. And I was feeling pretty good. But the one thing that was maybe not so convenient about that passage was that morning sickness kind of settled in the day that we left. And of course, there was no getting off the boat. So I kind of had a miserable passage just being in that first trimester. So I don't recommend anybody to go offshore in their first trimester. But, you know, I learned the hard way.
Well, that sounds like good advice.
Having two on board after all of that has been really great, because Soliana then had a companion, because part of the cruising life is it's hard to find children. There's not that many cruisers, or at least as we were doing, there was not that many children on board. And so for Soliana, it was a serious mission for her to find kids. Much to her credit, she's pretty gregarious. She's pretty social. And so we would row ashore to a beach on some country, Madagascar, wherever we were. And although she didn't speak their language, they didn't speak her language, she had an incredible ability to make friends just by approaching them, smiling, doing a little dance, showing them something. And before we knew it, they were off and running and playing. But that certainly made a difference to have two children, because they could share the experience of being on board, offshore, just imaginative play, all those things that children do that parents tend to be a little bit distracted and not as focused on.
Soliana, do you ever get bored? How do you keep yourselves busy?
Well, sometimes I wrestle with Effa, and we read some books, and we do some coloring, and we play with our dolls. Yeah, well, we swim a lot. Yeah, and we do some, and we row, and we can sail our dinghy.
And what are the most amazing things you've seen?
Lemurs, and whales, and hippos, and giraffes, and elephants, and turtles, and lots of pretty fish, and crocodiles, and gorillas, and monkeys, and birds, and lots of things.
Soliana, it sounds like you're having the most amazing adventure. Thank you so much for telling us about it. Bruce, Costa Rica to Hawaii took you 41 days. When you arrive in a country after so long at sea, do you ever find it overwhelming to be bombarded with stimuli?
We've now moved ashore here on Orcas Island in Washington State. And we're still experiencing a bit of that, even though our last ocean trip was in July. So, yeah, you go from that environment of not much external stimulation to being ashore and everyone's living their lives and doing all the things that humans do. And it can be very overwhelming. It can also, I mean, sometimes it can actually be kind of hard to walk. You know, you haven't walked for 41 days, so you haven't really used those muscles. And just physically, it can be a bit challenging. It's also exciting because you get to have those things that you've been craving. And I have to say, on that 41-day trip, it was really Tiffany and I that wanted to get ashore, as any adult would, as you crave land, more than the kids. The kids enter a really interesting zone where they're pretty happy on the boat, and they didn't seem to have, especially Sepha Jane, who was 4 at the time. She seemed like she could stay on that boat forever. You know, she had all her needs met. She was doing what she liked to do, which is looking at books and being with her parents. And even when we arrived in Hilo, you know, we were all excited to go ashore, and Sepha just said, "Oh, I think I'll just stay here." So,
Tiffany, you visited more than 30 countries, including Tahiti, Fiji, Indonesia, Thailand, South Africa, Brazil, Panama, Costa Rica. I could go on. Other than the birth of your children, what were the highlights for you of the trip?
I think for both Bruce and I, we always had an insatiable desire to travel and see different cultures. So for us, just coming into a new country and exploring the diversity of the landscape, people, food, the language, all of those things were so intriguing to us. And I think the nice thing about cruising is that when you enter into a country, you usually get about 3 or 4 months. And so you have a pretty good amount of time to explore and digest and live within those different cultures. People would recognize that we were foreigners. And for some countries where people don't travel very much, we were of great interest because we were sort of an insight into how other people in the world live. So there was a mutual interest sometimes and some really nice exchanges. Also, people bent over backwards to help us, which I think was kind of unexpected. I didn't think that people would be so intrigued and curious about us, but also concerned that we had water, that we had food, that we knew how to get from A to B, that our children were healthy, that just all of those basic human needs were met for us. And Bruce and I were always astounded at how, even in the poorest of country, in fact, mostly in the poorest of countries, people would go way out of their way to help us. And that was really insightful. It was really positive experience. It was a really beautiful thing to connect with people from different cultures and find the commonalities. And again, I think the wildlife as well. We were always in search of seeing these environments firsthand. And for us, that was an incredibly enriching educational experience. You know, I don't think you can experience that kind of thing in a book. So to be even offshore in the middle of the ocean is just an incredible experience to see what the wildlife is like out there, to see how the environment changes continually, and to see how you conduct yourself in the face of those challenges that arise when they do. So I think it was an inner journey as well as an outer journey. And for both Bruce and I don't think we'll ever be fully satiated. After, you know, 11 years of cruising, it's good to take a break and reflect on the experiences we've had. And I think that because we're taking that time, we can now see how good we had it. And that, you know, in the back of our minds, we're always planning the next trip. We want to hold on to our boat. We don't want to sell our boat. We want to keep our lifestyle as simple as possible so that at the drop of a hat, we can take off and go on an adventure again. It might not be 10 years around the world. It might only be 3 months to Alaska. But the fact that we can just make an escape plan relatively easily is kind of the goal now.
Bonnie Last Charters is Mallorca's number one experience.
Bonnie Last is a 57-foot converted fishing boat. She was built in 1949 as a herring ring netter in Scotland, and now she's set up for the Mediterranean. Apart from just relaxing in the sunshine on the deck, there's paddleboarding and any kind of exploring you can imagine up along the north coast of Mallorca here, quite often with Maggie the dog in tow as well. Bonnie Last Charters is unique because no charter is really the same. We work really hard to make it the perfect day for each individual client. To be able to go out and enjoy the day with the guests on board is just fantastic.
For more information and to make a booking, visit bonnielastcharters.com.
Oh, I still appreciate a hot shower. I mean, we did live in the tropics, so we were swimming every day. We were clean, but we were not getting hot showers unless it was from our solar shower. So yeah, I mean, I think you have to be deprived of these conveniences to really appreciate them. To be honest, most people have not been deprived, so they take it for granted that hot water comes out of the tap or that you have ice in the freezer. We treasured the ice when we had a cooler, so we would buy blocks of ice, and that was always a big deal. But yeah, there's these little things in life that you take for granted, and when you don't have them, it's great to get them back. There's something to be said for that, I think.
And what's the very best thing about living on a boat?
Oh, it's the freedom you have, the freedom to go where you want. If you were to, say, take a cruise ship to the Caribbean or something like that, you know, in that case, you really have zero responsibility. You've paid your money and you expect the showers to be hot and the food to be good. And I think because there's so little responsibility, the reward is pretty limited. Whereas if you were to take your own small boat, now you have maximum responsibility. You have to be aware of every rock. You have to be watching weather systems. You have to be aware of even visa entry requirements. You know, there's all these things that you have to do your research. You have to be paying attention. You have to be even physically fit and mentally aware. So it's a huge job, a huge responsibility. But I think because of that, when you do go and have a successful voyage, the rewards are infinitely greater. So yeah, you having that freedom, taking on that responsibility, and then enjoying the rewards of your efforts is the best thing about having a boat and living on a boat.
What would you say are the gravest dangers you faced during your 11 years? And did you ever feel out of your depth?
Yeah, there's been times. I think, and other people, I think, that have been in challenging situations would agree that there's a certain stress level that rises and rises, say, as the weather deteriorates and you're anticipating putting a reef in. And so you have this anxiety mixed with fear that is rising. And you do question whether you're out of your depth. The most effective way to resolve that is to make a decision and take physical action. And I've always felt that once you make the decision, okay, the reef is going in, and then you're impelled into this physical action. As you're doing it, there isn't really fear at that point because you've made this decision. You know it has to happen, and even whether or not it's the right decision, in the moment that you're taking action, the fear definitely takes a back seat to this impetus to resolve the situation. And so that for me, that's always been a good thing to keep in mind, because it's amazing that even though we've reefed that boat in the middle of the night many, many times, or done any kind of sail change that might be challenging, I still find that ability to make a decision and take physical action is a good way to resolve it.
Tiffany, where are you now, and is Alaska really on the horizon?
We both grew up in the Pacific Northwest, just on the Canadian-US border here, and we are now back home, and we have landed on a beautiful island called Orcas Island. It's a small island. I'm always a little bit amused at myself because I think of Orcas Island as being this, you know, fast pace. But I think for most people, it would be a pretty slow pace. But because we're still adjusting, I feel like we've entered the shuffle of social networking and working for dollars, as well as just maintaining schooling and a home base. So all those things considered, we've landed in a very beautiful part of the world, and we'd like to think of this as being our home base, but we still plan to take Vixen on more excursions. We're in a fortunate position because we have the entire BC and Alaskan coast in front of us, and to tell you the truth, we haven't explored that very much. 10 years ago, we could have chosen to explore this coastline, but instead the warmer waters called. But now we want to see the wildlife of Alaska. We don't have a time frame again, and again, we are just taking it month by month to see how we settle and to see how the girls integrate into land living. But it seems to be happening pretty quickly. They got a cat for Christmas, so we'll see which direction we head. So we definitely like being closer to family, and that's why we made a push to come back to this corner of the world. We're fortunate in that our family is not far away. There may be a ferry ride away, but a lot of why we needed to come home was to see parents, to make sure grandparents are connecting with grandchildren, to make sure kids are connecting with cousins. And that's really hard to do when you're cruising for 10 years. So we're taking the time to do that right now.
Soliana, if I can ask you another question, what do you miss about living on a boat?
I like being able to go wherever you possibly want, whereas in a house you have to sort of stay where you are.
And would you like to set sail again?
I would like to stay here for a little bit.
Bruce, where's Vixen now?
Vixen's on a mooring on Orcas Island.
Do you keep her prepared, you know, ready to go at a moment's notice?
Well, I have to say, when we got back here, we unloaded a lot of stuff that we had accumulated over 10 years, and the boat came up probably 2 or 3 inches on her waterline. So she's lighter than she used to be, which is probably a good thing. But yeah, she's pretty ready to go, I would say. It wouldn't take much to get her going again.
Finally, what advice would you give to someone contemplating a trip of similar scope?
Well, I would first say that we had a wonderful experience. We had an incredible adventure. And along those lines, I would say if you want to do something like this, you really have to ask yourself the question, do you want an adventure or do you want a vacation? Tiffany and I, when we set off on this, we were definitely wanting to go on an adventure. So we were expecting not to have a refrigerator. We were expecting to have some challenging conditions. And the boat was appropriate for that. And we were expecting to work along the way to get by on very little, to make money as we went. And physical comfort was not the main concern. The experience was ultimate. If it's a vacation, you're basically going to have to be taking all the comforts of your apartment or home and put them on a boat. And that can be done with modern technology, but it is going to cost a lot more money and require a totally different kind of boat.
Old Fox went out on a chilly night, and he prayed for the moon to give him light. He had many miles to go that night before he reached the town. Oh, town, oh, town, oh, and many miles to go that night before he reached the town. Oh, around till they came to the great big bin where the ducks and the geese put their in. Couple of you better raise my chin for I leave this town. Oh, town, oh, town, oh, couple of you better raise my chin for I leave this town. Oh, oh, he grabbed the gray goose by his neck and he stung the little one over his back. He demanded the quack, quack, quack and legs all hanging down. Oh, down, oh, down, oh, he demanded the quack, 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 legs all hanging down. Had jumped out of bed. Out of the window she cocked her head. Con John, John, the baby's gone. Foxes on town, oh, town, oh, town, oh, John, John, the baby's gone. The foxes on the town, oh. Oh, Johnny ran to the top of the hill. Blew his horn both loud and shrill. Foxes said, better flee if I kill. Soon be on my trail, oh, trail, oh. Hello, foxes, too, leave my kill, spin me on my trail, oh. Oh, ran till he came to his cozy den. There are the little ones, 8, 9, 10. Daddy, daddy, better go back again, cause it must be a nice fine town, oh. Town, oh, town, oh, daddy, daddy, better go back again, cause it must be a mighty fine town, oh. Oh, the fox and his wife, without any strife, cut off the goose with a fork and a knife. They never had such a supper in their life, and the little ones chewed on the bones, oh, bones, oh, bones, oh. They never had such a supper in their life, and the little ones chewed on the bones, oh.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they are also the most resourceful, responsive and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.